she was talking, so yeah.
Spring meeting to order, please. They're having a roll call.
Kurt Olsted.
Here.
Tracy Carlucci.
Here.
Tim Doherty.
Here.
Michael Dressler. Michael Francis.
Here.
Robert Holtaway.
Here.
Bruce James.
Here, sort of.
Carl Richco.
Here.
Jim Riley.
Here.
Michael Savatich.
Here.
Michael Tefe. James Vizioli. Richard Bowden.
Yes, here.
Robert Walton.
Can you please read the open public meeting statement?
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to newspapers throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Can you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this point in time, I'll entertain a motion on the minutes.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Olsted?
Yes.
Councilmember Carlucci?
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler? Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richco?
Yes.
Councilmember Savatich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tefang? Councilmember Vizioli? Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton? Chairman Riley?
Yes. The chairman's report, I really had nothing this evening, except I did want to point out that in the last few weeks I've had several compliments from individuals, both personal and, you know, individuals and businesses that have complimented working with the staff here, where they thought they were going to hit a dead end or a roadblock and pushing away, and that was not the case. And I just wanted to share that publicly, that, you know, it was great that people could turn to us and not look at us like an enemy. Know that they can back this up, so I thought that was great. Any other council members? Mr. Bristow?
If you're traveling up 287 towards the Malwa area, you pass a large quarrying operation in Riverdale. This is owned by the Tilcon Company, and Tilcon would like to expand their operations into Bloomingdale in an area called Federal Hill. Not only would be quarrying, but also some residential development. Federal Hill is significant historically, and also the Quantic River runs right through that area. Just to put this into perspective, Bloomingdale, in a 2007 letter to the Highlands Council, asked that Federal Hill be remapped into the preservation area to increase its protection. Bloomingdale Road, greater than 69% of Federal Hill contains slopes over 20%, and slopes in excess of 50% are abundant. Development would result in a large increase in runoff and erosion. The thin acidic soils associated with areas of steep slopes are particularly sensitive to disturbances, and extensive regrading or other disruptive action could irrevocably harm the existing environment by changing both the flow of perched groundwater and the chemistry of the soil. The same letter went on to say, Federal Hill, due to heavy forestation, dense vegetation, and proximity to the Pequannock River, maximizes aquifer recharge. Bloomingdale has long recognized that the lands adjacent to Federal Hill are flood-prone, and this reason, recharge in the area is extremely important. Now Bloomingdale, after trying to preserve Federal Hill for over 25 years, is in negotiations with Tilcon. I guess the steep slopes and the other environmental constraints have disappeared. I have left in front of you a letter, 11-page letter from Ross Kushner, who's the executive director of the Pequannock River Coalition. I'm not going to ask you to read it tonight, but please, in the coming month before our next meeting, if you have a chance to read it, It's very good as far as detail and research. This is should be a concern to us because the Quonic River is a C1 river, and we've had other times where we've discussed, like when they wanted to put the casinos in Orange County, we were concerned about the Ramapo River, and I'm concerned about the Quonic River and the effect this development, this extension of this quarry would have on the Quonic River. So please, in the next month, take some time, read the letter, and maybe we can discuss it next time, the next meeting.
Good, Mr. Richard. Anybody else?
Yes.
Yeah. I want to follow up on Carl's comments and agree with everything he said, because I'm very familiar with that area, being on the Open Space Committee of Passaic County for 15 years, and we discussed that at length. And I just want to indicate that this area is still ecologically sensitive. Those characteristics did not go away. There's still the wildlife, the forests, the streams, the steep slopes, the water recharge. That's all very important. And so if we decided on the basis of all that to preserve and save this land, then we could continue to do it now.
Any other comments, council members? Seeing none, we'll move on to the executive director's report.
The first item I have is I am filling in for Council Member Walton on the Landowner Equity and Land Preservation Committee meeting. The main item that we're working on is our open space program, as you know. And as part of the rulemaking process, we've reached out to various stakeholders for input on our draft document. They were several non-governmental organizations involved in open space programs, county open space program directors, and we also invited Susan Payne and Greg Romano to that meeting to get their reaction. They're members of the HDC Bank Committee, as you know, but we asked them to participate in this meeting primarily because of their experience with the Green Acres program. So we got some really good input from them as well. We sent the draft document down to Office of Administrative Law for an informal review, which they volunteered to do ahead of them. Once this is done, we will do whatever tweaking we need to do, and then it goes to OAL for real. So we're moving, which is, you know, from my perspective, just really exciting. Yeah, this is a good thing. For my report, for petition approvals, Mouton Township, Mars County, a draft consistency review and recommendation report were sent to the municipality. Their petition approval documents have been posted on the web, and we expect to see them on the April agenda for petition approval. And I will note that they have already been approved for the checklist approach by the Plan Conformance Committee. On plan conformance implementation, in Oxford Township, Warren County, the municipal exemption determination resolution and authorization received municipal adoption and a certificate was issued. We have some upcoming training sessions, and you are all cordially invited to attend. If you have the time and inclination, just let us know if you would like to appear. On April 23rd, we have the Highland Stormwater Management Mobile Application Training. This session is designed for designated stormwater coordinators and municipal public works members. It will provide an overview of Highlands Council-funded stormwater management program elements with a focus on the use of a mobile application to meet requirements of the New Jersey stormwater management rules regarding the mapping of outfall locations and conditions. And I know that sounds kind of dry, but it's actually a really interesting device, so I would urge you all to attend. And on April 29th, we have Highlands Municipal Exemption Determination Certification Training, which we've done before, bringing municipals up to speed to be exposed to their own exemptions. I will say that 17 out of 47 conforming towns have gone through this process. It has been really, really well received. Towns are excited about being able to provide the service to their residents, and we look forward to having it expand even further. On the HDC bank credit allocation and purchase update, two new HDC allocation applications were received, one in Washington Township, Morris County, and one in Lebanon Township, Huntington County. For personnel, as you know, Andy Davis has moved on to other adventures. In his place, at least for a while, and filling in for other legal matters as well, is Matt Kelly, who I'm sure is familiar to you. I'm delighted delighted to have you here. I know where you are now. There is a draft of job description for chief counsel that we've done. I would like to review it with the personnel committee before we move forward. So that's kind of where we are on that one. And lastly, on the list of meetings that we've gone to, you'll see under on March 2nd, Corey and I went to the Passaic County Realtors Association. Corey made the presentation. I was just writing shotgun, but this came out of one of our stakeholder meetings. One of the realtors that attended thought it would be very helpful to them to hear a presentation on exemptions. So we did that. It was very well received. They want to have us back. They want to do a little tape, of course, presentation, so they can put it up on their website. And that was, I think, a really big step forward in making a greater community aware of what exemptions actually entail instead of what they may have misthought them to be. Do you want to add anything to that?
No.
Okay. And that is all I have.
Thank you. Well, actually, that brings us to the...
excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question on an item in the report.
Yes.
Under the project review activities in your report, Margaret, I know that you don't have documents available for the items that are in progress, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, links are given to other things, but not to that. Do you know, or can perhaps you're not there yet, on the planning area exemption review, exemption 11, are the RMP standards that are going to be applied, will they require the 300-foot buffer, or are they going to use the exemption from the setbacks that accompany stormwater regulations of the New Jersey DEP?
The planning area exemptions are to be consistent with the RMP, so when a town is conforming, we use the conformance standards.
So do you know, have you gotten to that point yet where you're looking at the crossing of the stream?
Yeah, we're looking at all the resources for that and evaluating it. But if it is in a planning area that's conforming and it is an exemption, it still leaves that consistent with the RMP evaluation.
Then do you know, will it be a directional drill instead of a dry stream crossing?
I don't have those details right now.
Okay, so when would we get that information?
We may have to request additional information from the applicant upon the review, but it's still under review.
Okay. So at the next meeting, perhaps we'll get an update. I mean, these things typically take, what, a month or more, depending on the exemption?
If we need additional information, it could take longer, but we do try to move that within 4 to 6 weeks if we have everything that we need.
I am interested to know the answer to that, whether or not it will be dry stream crossing or directional drill. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just one question.
Sure.
On the council's attorney for the board, what's your timeline on that?
For me personally, as soon as possible. Yeah, we really need that position filled.
Okay. Are you planning on changing the posting for that for qualifications? What's the necessary mean to meet the personnel committee?
You know, I'd like them to look at it.
Has something changed from the last?
It hasn't.
That's why it's going to the personnel committee. It's exactly what happened last time. We went to the personnel committee and then they posted the job. I anticipate that being done in short order.
Are you anticipating any changes to the qualifications you're looking for from the attorney?
That's why I want to talk to the personnel committee. I mean, I see it's kind of a generic from my perspective job description. You might want to add things to it, like familiarity with the rulemaking process, since we're embarking on that. I don't know.
Well, if that's the road you're going to take, Chairman, I'd like to at least have some input into, my opinion, what I think an attorney should have as far as environmental background. I don't know what the other council members may want to have their own input, so that this doesn't get done in a vacuum, that there's an open process. Can we be included in that?
Certainly submit any suggestions you have.
Well, can I get a copy of what's
posted
last, and if the personnel committee meets before they move on something, could we at least have an input on what you decided?
Yeah, I'll shoot the job description to the whole council after the meeting so you have it.
We'll have the current one, and then once we finalize the new one, we'll get that to you as well.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you. And I did have a nice conversation with Andy on departure.
He said
we had a nice conversation. Thank you.
If you could send it to everybody, because I'd be interested in seeing
that. No, that's what I said. I'll send it to the whole council so you see it.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay, you can always keep Matt on.
I don't think Matt wants to stay.
I tried, but he's good to talk to you.
So you read out on the line of the equity report. That brings us to the RMP update committee.
Yes, thank you. The RMP committee continues to maintain an aggressive meeting schedule. We're meeting at least once per month. And there are several components that we're working on simultaneously right now. First and foremost is the technical advisory committees. The acronym is TAC. We're in the process right now of having the staff compile the membership of the TACs. And just as a reminder, the TACs are non-voting, non-policy-making committees coordinated to provide advice to the council and our consultants to review the proposed indicators for completeness, relevancy, accuracy, and accurate data based on their expertise. We're expecting a total of 2 meetings for each of the 10 TACs that we've created for a total of 20 meetings. As I said, we've got a number of interested persons who submitted resumes to date. We sought people as well, and we are seeking consistent resumes from every person that is seeking to participate or that we're asking to be a part of the TAC, so that there's no question that they're qualified to serve on these various TAC committees. If you have any suggestions, there's still time. I've talked to Corey, talked to Chris, talked to our executive director. If there's something specific that you wish to recommend in terms of a person versus TAC. And of course, we're also seeking your input in these various TACs as well. If you haven't been contacted for a TAC, expect to be attacked. The public comment web portal, we've extended the deadline for public comment. Staff is able to do that through negotiations with our contractee and has done so at no additional cost to the council. So now the web portal will be open to the public for comment through April 30th. The fiscal impact assessment, we actually have a live presentation this afternoon from Steve Gunnels, who is here. And he's been extremely busy with the first component of the analysis, which is the regional economic evaluation. Excuse me. I'm so sorry. As I said, he is here today. He's prepared to make a presentation to all of us. I'd like to remind council and the public that this is all preliminary work, and it's only one component of the entire package that he'll be doing. In addition to what he's started, we're also going to be doing work with the demographic and real estate analysis, municipal, regional, fiscal, financial analysis, and municipal fact. I believe the plan is to try to hold questions until the end of the presentation. And I know that it's a bit lengthy, but Steve's going to do his best to keep it as condensed as possible. And with that, I'd like to introduce you to Steve. Appreciate you coming out today.
Good evening.
Thank you. Okay, it's working. Just a little faster. Good afternoon. How's that? No feedback? Okay.
A little closer here.
There we go. Yeah, so we've been working on the first component of the fiscal impact assessment, and what I want to review with you today is kind of the analysis and what we found for this first phase. I'd like to briefly cover just, you know, what are the data sources that we're using so you understand what it is we're actually measuring and talking about. a little bit about how we classified municipalities, so we were comparing similar municipalities to each other, and then walk through some of the key stages of the economic evaluation and the correlations, the kind of statistical analysis that goes along with it. Before we get to that, though, just a kind of reminder of what this overall process is. This is the regional economic evaluation, the first phase. And here we're looking at the economy measured by employment, the number of jobs in various economic sectors of the economy. In the next stage, the demographic and real estate analysis, we will pick up what's happening with the types of households, the ages of people who are living in the various municipalities, as well as what's happening in the real estate market with property values, construction, and development. Then the third phase is the fiscal and financial analysis, and that's where we will look at what the impact has been on the fiscal resources of the municipalities and counties, and the potential needs of the council over the next 10 years to continue implementing the act and the plan. The final report will combine those three documents together, and as we'll talk about today, we may update a little bit if new data becomes available between now and finishing up the final report. You know, kind of the key task here is really to measure the economy and measure the economic activity that's been taking place in the Highlands region and in other regions around it to understand how it's doing relative to, say, its peers. So when we talk about measuring economy, there's two basic things we want to look at. One is the value of what's produced in goods and services. But we don't really have that data when we get much below a metropolitan level. So the other thing that gets looked at is employment. And so we have two data sources we've used. The first is the quarterly census of employment and wages. This is information that's collected by the state through the Workman's Compensation Program. And what we were able to look at is the record for every individual employer with every facility or place they operate, and the number of employees each month. And that information comes from this. The information is confidential because it has confidential data from individual employers, but we'll roll that up to the final analysis. And there's a little bit of data error because it all starts with a human being filling out a form and then usually another human being reading that form. But other than that, this is the solid level of data, and it's what's used for all national economic statistics across the nation. But we only have that for New Jersey. So we also use what's called the LEHD data set, which is compiled by the Census Bureau. It starts with that same QCEW data from each of the states, and then it ties it in with IRS records and everything else. This is good data that we would like to use because we can compare what's happening in Pennsylvania and New York, what's happening in New Jersey, but they're now 2 years behind schedule in releasing their data. So we're very limited in what we can actually do at this point with that data set. The other set of data is some of the social and demographic factors that we looked at as part of this, and we'll look at in a lot more detail in the next set. A big part of that comes from the census, but with the 2010 census, the federal government changed how it does the census. It no longer has a long form. Starting in 2010, all you get out of census is number of people in a household, their age, race, and gender. So the Census Bureau followed that up with the American Community Survey, which gives you all of that other data about housing type, family relationships, and everything else. So we use that because it also comes on an annual basis. So one of the key challenges is to kind of compare similar municipalities to each other. And so what we're looking at in this stage of the project and all the ones subsequent to this is we have the Highlands region, which is, you know, outlined in pink here. And then we've come up with a lovely title, the Highland County Municipalities Not in the Highlands Region, which are the other municipalities in the seven counties, and they're shown here in yellow. And then we added four additional counties for northern New Jersey. And when we talk about northern New Jersey, it's everything. The first two, the Highlands region and those other municipalities, are separate. You're either in one or the other. Everybody is in northern New Jersey. And then for the analysis, we picked up the adjacent four counties in Pennsylvania and the adjacent four counties in New York. So group municipalities, we looked at their population density and their employment density. And we started out, you know, what is normal for the Highlands region? If you look at how it varies, what's normal for the Highlands region, created low, medium, and high, and then applied those standards to the other regions. But we didn't use the entire area of the jurisdiction because different jurisdictions, especially in the Highlands region, have land and water and wetlands that cannot be developed. They have land that's set aside in agricultural easements, open space, recreation. So for the area of the jurisdiction, we separated out the land area that's in water and wetlands and the land area that's in public and private open space, which is shown on this map. So when we look at the Highlands region, this is the population density, with the light yellow being the low density, this being medium, and the bright orange being the high density. Based on the Highlands region municipalities, we put a cutoff point at the mean population density plus 2.5 standard deviations. And anything above that, we've labeled an outlier municipality. So all of these municipalities are in gray are not included in the analysis. So when I refer to, So when I refer to northern New Jersey, it's all 10 counties except for the municipalities that are in gray. And then Walpac, we excluded, kept it out as a municipality because the jurisdiction's all in public and private open space, so it ended up with 0 acres and there's no density to calculate there. But we looked at some Rucker studies, you know, where they say that it is one of the outlier municipalities in New Jersey, so it's in keeping with that. When we look at employment density, once again, we have low, medium, and high. As far as employment density, we only had one municipality that was excluded as an outlier, and then Walpac once again. So this is how the final classification works within the Highlands region. We have low population density and low employment density, medium population, medium employment density, and then high and high, and all the other versions of that. And so when we look at this 18-county region that gets compared in this analysis, this is how all of the different municipalities are classified. And I'll just make one more little point. When we looked at the land area and we excluded the wetlands and the open space, that was only to get us to this point. We don't exclude that from anything else going forward. That was just to get us to this point in determining what was low, medium, and high density. I'm not going to go through this. That's just there if you get a copy of the PowerPoint so you have an understanding of what the cutoff points were that we used. Okay, the economic evaluation. I wanted, before we get into the actual evaluation of the Highlands region, to give you a little bit of context of what's what was happening nationally. So what we're looking at, it's shown here in purple, is 2004, the year the Act was adopted. We're looking at 2008, the year the Regional Master Plan was adopted, and 2013, which was the most recent year for which we had data available. This is the gross domestic product of the United States, going up and down, mostly up. And the light areas are where there were recessions. So one of the challenges as we go through this is that 2004 was early in a very large up cycle. 2008 was the beginning of a very extreme down cycle in the economy. And 2013 is in the recovery. We've actually, at this point in 2012, the national economy was producing more than it had prior to the recession. So that complicates what we're doing a little bit. Even more so when you look at employment nationally. You know, this data goes back to 1947. If you look at most recessions in this history, employment went down, the recession's over, laid off workers were brought back, and employment immediately starts growing again. Until we get to the 90-91 dot-com bust and that recession, and you see it took a year and a half before employment started growing again. Same thing with the 2001 recession. It took a couple of years before employment started to come back. And then, of course, with the most recent recession, it's we're just now getting up to where we had more jobs than we did before the recession. And then the other thing is to understand the importance of the housing market in this last recession that we had. This is the number of housing completions in the U.S. And in March 2006 was the height of the housing market in the U.S. We didn't enter a recession overall in 2008, but we had almost 2 years of dramatically falling construction activity in the U.S. And it didn't bottom out until 2011. And in the first 2 years of housing coming back, multifamily housing went from about 10% of construction to about 30%. So one of the pieces we talk about is what happened to the construction industry in the Highlands region. And I know if you live there and you see it or you experience it, it seems very dramatic, and it was. But you know, part of what is to understand is it was a very dramatic, devastating recession for the housing industry overall. So the first thing we look at is what happened within New Jersey. This is where we're using the QCEW data, which we have data for 2013, the most recent that's available, and that's the very detailed data set. But it doesn't cover Pennsylvania and New York, so we're only looking at what happened within New Jersey right here. And then just once again to remind you of how we classified the municipalities there. This shows the total employment in each of the areas we're looking at in 2004, 2008, and 2013. So we have the Highlands region, the Highlands County municipalities, not the Highlands region, and northern New Jersey. So just two little things to take away from this slide. The relative magnitude of the number of jobs in the Highlands region, which is, I think, about 20% of the total jobs in that 10-county northern New Jersey region. And then as we talk about the job loss, and there were large job losses, sometimes it helps to have that perspective of seeing it relative to the number of jobs that weren't lost in each of these time periods. So the meat of it, when we look at the rate of change in total employment, and that's another mouthful, normally we just say job growth, but we're going from positive to negative, and it seems confusing to talk about negative job growth. You can see from 2004 to 2008, the Highlands region had the highest annual rate of employment change. And then from 2008 to 2013, the Highlands region's annual rate of employment change was higher than that for northern New Jersey and the total statewide. And it was ever so slightly, 0.04 percentage points lower than the rate of employment change in the Highlands County municipalities that aren't in the Highlands region. So one of the things we wanted to look at was if the Act and the regional plan are having an economic impact. One of the things we would expect to see is the economy, measured in job growth, suffering more in the Highlands region than it did elsewhere. So what we see here, looking with just these comparison regions, just with this one data set, we don't see that negative effect on the Highlands region relative to the other two. The other thing is to then look at what happened within the Highlands region. And so this is showing us, once again, the total number of jobs in each of those 3 years and all of the regulatory sub-areas that are provided for in the Act. And, you know, when we look at it now, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the preservation area, but be mindful that that's only about 10% of the total jobs in the Highlands region. So this is then looking at the graph is showing us the percentage change in total employment across each of these areas. And from 2004 to 2008, each of the sub-areas had positive job growth except for the preservation area. And from 2008 to 2013, all of the sub-areas had negative job growth except for the conforming Highlands centers. And the one thing you'll probably note, even if I don't point it out, is we did have, you know, within the preservation area, a larger percentage drop in employment. Now, overall, that equated to 2,000 jobs. And I don't want to belittle what happened to those 2,000 people who lost jobs. It was a higher job loss rate, but not so much so in order of magnitude. And so one of the things we did was go back and look at that and try and understand what happened in the preservation area. And, you know, the short end of the story is that a lot of construction jobs were located in the preservation area. So where the preservation area is about 10% of the jobs, it was about 20% of the region's construction jobs. And is a percentage of all the jobs, construction is percentage of all jobs, and the preservation area was twice as high as it was in any other area, including those comparison regions, municipalities not in the region, and all of northern New Jersey. So where we had a recession that was heavily hit in the construction industry, and we had a playing area that had a higher percentage of jobs in the construction industry, we see, you know, part of that impact where it had that higher rate of job loss. The one last thing to point out about that, though, is with this data, construction is the odd man out. If we talk about a manufacturing job, that's counted wherever that manufacturing plant is. We talk about a hotel job, it's wherever that hotel is. For construction, the job is counted wherever the contractor, the employer, has their office or their place of business, not where they're working on individual construction projects. So, ironically, or I should say ironically, we see that impact in the construction sector, but we can't say it's a planning area issue. It'll depend on where they were actually working. So that is something we revisit in the next phase of this project, where we will look at construction activity and what changed in construction activity. And I think I already hit these three conclusion points as we were going through. So the second way of looking at this is the interstate comparisons, and this is where we're using the data from LEHD, the Census Bureau data. And once again, this data only goes through 2011. So what we're seeing is just the beginnings of recovery from the recession. It doesn't really pick up on the tail end, a new economic trend. It's more about which areas were recovering more quickly or less quickly from the recession. I should say more slowly or less slowly. I think they were all slow. So once again, this slide shows the total employment in each of the comparison regions and gives you an idea, you know, by order of magnitude of how big an economy we're talking about with these. So this is a little bit different than the others. This just shows the year of the recession and the year before, the year after, to make the point that all of these regions lost jobs during the recession. So what we see here then is the rate of change in employment. And the purple bar is what happened prior to the act, from 2002 to 2004, and 2002 being the earliest year we have data for. Then from 2004 to 2008, and then 2008 to 2011. And so as you can see, the Highlands region had positive job growth from 2002 to 2004, in contrast to both the municipalities not in the Highlands region and northern New Jersey. And the better growth that we saw before, from 2004 to 2008, but not as high as what was happening in New York and Pennsylvania. And then from 2008 to 2011, by 2011, the Highlands region had recovered the least share of jobs lost in the recession relative to these other regions. But only Pennsylvania had actually, those four counties in Pennsylvania had recovered their pre-recession jobs. So the one last point I want to cover is looking at the rate of change in employment. And because we have this annual data with LAHD, this is for the Highlands region. So from 2002 to 2003, employment went down, but then it went up. You can't see it here, but it went up by a fraction of a percentage point here, and then it came down. And the key thing when we look at this is to kind of see three different trends. We have a couple years where the rate of change of employment is going up. And then in 2005, it changes directions. The rate of change slows down. Somebody's applying the brakes. It hadn't stopped yet, but it starts going down. And we have 5 years of declining employment rate. And then as a trend, 2 years going up. This is important because when we actually look at the four counties in New York and the four counties in Pennsylvania, we see the same trend. 2 years going up, and then this long slide that culminates in the recession, and then coming back out of it. The Highlands region had 1 year that it didn't do that, and New York had, you know, this year when it went up instead of continuously down. But these three regions had that same trend. When you look within New Jersey, what you see is the same thing, except that northern New Jersey as a whole grew an extra year before it started its decline. And you look at the Highlands County municipalities that aren't in the Highlands region, they are truly the odd one out here. where all of the other regions had some couple years of growth, the municipalities outside of the Highlands region were still declining job growth. And we don't have the 2001 data, but there was a recession, so it's probably not a stretch to assume it was declining before this too. So it has 2 years of decline, 2 years of up, 2 years of down, 2 years of up. But if you take all 18 counties and look at the Highlands region, the employment growth trend is that same pattern across all 18 counties as it was in Highlands region. Going up, and then this general decline that ended up in recession, and then starting to go back up again. So just a few quick points there. I think I mentioned those as I was going through. And then, you know, this, which comes off of those last sets of charts, that the Highlands employment growth rate trend was similar to all these other regions. It was never in the extreme one way or the other. And recession job losses were part of this five-year decline that was similar throughout the region, and the odd one out being the Highlands County municipalities that weren't in the region. So the other thing we did then is to take all of those grouped municipalities, the low population and low employment density ones, and look at what happens with employment change there and look at it across all those categories. The short story here is there's no consistent pattern. We'll have one set where the Highlands region did worse than the other two in 1 year, you know, one time period, and then better in the next time period. You'll have some where it was reversed, some where it was a little lower by the time, some where it was a little higher each time. When we go through that and look at that, what we're seeing then is that there is no consistent trend. Looking at it among groups of similar municipalities, that the Highlands region, you know, performed more negatively or more positively across the board. The last thing we did was to look at correlations and look at, you know, statistically, if you look at things like the age of the population, education, all these different factors statistically, and see what's correlated with change in employment at the municipal level across all 18 counties. What we come out with is a statistic that explains about 12.1% change in employment, which is very poor. This isn't anything you'd say, okay, based on this, we're going to go out and do something. You'd want something that's getting you to 60 or 70%. So there isn't a lot of correlation here, but where there is, and it's where it is that it's statistically significant, from 2004 to 2008, was that the areas with lower population densities were the ones that had higher employment growth.
Had higher
employment growth. Lower population density. In essence, the jobs were, you might think of it as more jobs were being created in those areas with lower population density than were being created in the higher density. The percentage change, stuff so wordy, but I wanted to be precise. Percentage change in portion of the population with only a high school diploma. Those areas that had an increase in the portion of the population with only a high school diploma had lower rates of employment. They performed worse. And then if we look at the manufacturing sector's share of total jobs in 2004, it was positive. So those municipalities with more manufacturing jobs had higher employment growth from 2004 to 2008. Everything else we looked at, and there were dozens upon dozens, weren't statistically significant. And the meaningful one that wasn't statistically significant was whether or not a municipality was in the Highlands region. So from 2004 to 2008, there was no statistically significant correlation between being in the Highlands, being in the Highlands region or outside of the Highlands region with employment. The last one, we looked at the same thing from 2008 to 2013. Mind you, this is going into the recession and starting to recover from it. Here, it's about 19% of the change in employment is explained, which is still very low. But where there were statistically significant correlations, just the opposite. The percentage change in median, percentage change in median age. The municipalities that were getting on average older had lower employment growth than the ones that weren't getting as old. And one that really makes this all confusing when we look at the construction sector's impact on jobs in the planning area. When you look at the municipality level, and there you're picking up a number of municipalities that have some planning, some preservation. Preservation. The construction sector's share of total jobs in 2008 was correlated with better employment growth from 2008 to 2013. So the municipal level, those municipalities with more construction jobs actually had better overall employment growth. Now this is throughout Northern New Jersey, all 10 counties when you look at that. And then once again, the one that really matters is the fact that a municipality being in or outside of the Highlands region was not statistically significantly correlated with employment change from 2008 to 2013. So the overall conclusion is not strong going in either direction, but at this stage in looking at the change in employment, which is a measure of economic activity, the data analysis doesn't reveal a statistically significant basis to conclude that the act or the regional plan had a positive or negative impact on economic growth in the Highlands region. And really, this is the last slide. I want to point out that, you know, we were just looking at this one aspect of the overall program. And the next phase, we're going to pick up what happened with the construction industry and building permits, the real estate analysis with land sales and housing values, and what is happening with population growth, age, family structure, all of those sorts of things.
Chair, could you go back to the one graph where you had all the regions and the keep all the job growth back and forth?
But before we do that, are you concluded?
Oh, well, just the final one. And then the third part is the fiscal analysis where we look at the impact on municipal and county governments and the impact on funding for the Highlands Council.
Before we open up the questions again, there was quite a bit of discussion based upon the analysis, and I think much more analysis needs to be done before we draw conclusions.
I was just going to say, it's one component just to be ending, and that's in all of our meetings we've concluded that it just prompts a lot of additional questions, and we've shared that with Steve already. And want you to do the same, and that's why we have a support before all of you today.
Now you would like to see it?
Yes.
You'll have to tell me stop when I...
Okay, go back one more. Seems that in the good times, the Highlands does better. It outshines every other sector. And in the bad times, it does worse than every other sector. Is there a reason for that?
Violence is in the middle there.
That's not the one. Go the other way. One more.
And that was going forward. Was it these or one of these?
No, it wasn't one of those. Yeah. And it just seemed that one graph that I was looking at seemed that it did better. And then it drops considerably more, it seems, than the others.
Yes. Here, during the recession, you know, that 1 year change in jobs in the Highlands region was lower. I forget if it was on the other one. Yeah, so in that 1 year, the Highlands region, as a percentage change, you know, percentage job decline, it was at the bottom there.
No reason for that.
One of the things that's usually difficult to do is to take a one-year change when you look at any kind of depending on the frequency the data is reported. If it's annual data you're looking at, a one-year change doesn't really tell you much about a trend. So, you know, that's why here what we're looking at is, you know, we're seeing upward growth in the employment growth rate, downward growth, even though 1 year it went up. What you're really looking at is a five-year period where it's just slowing down and slowing down and slowing down. So typically, we don't look at 1 year and say, what happened there? I don't know that I have a better answer, but I'll give that some thought.
Tell me again the reason for pointing out that the construction company addresses are in the preservation zone, but the construction site are outside of it. Let's tell us lightness about that.
Well, I think one of the conclusions that it might be easy to jump to is that through the Act and through the plan, and correct me if I'm misspeaking here, you had more restrictions in place in the preservation area that made it more less easy to, you know, to do construction projects in the preservation area, and that's where we saw the job loss. But the job loss, that doesn't mean that those jobs that were lost in the preservation area were lost because there was less construction in the preservation area. They could very well have been working in the planning area, working, you know, counties away. All the other sectors, if we say manufacturing, that means a job where they're working physically in that place at that time. Construction's the one that doesn't get counted that way. So I'm not saying there. I'm sorry, and I should probably emphasize that fact. I'm not saying there wasn't an impact, but I don't think we can draw that conclusion until we look at kind of the building permit data and bring that into the discussion.
Even when there was a lot of construction in the area, it may not have been counted as jobs in that area because the builder was located outside of the area, and that's where the jobs are being counted.
And so if you have a small contractor that has, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 people working for them, you know, that's not uncommon that job takes place at their house. You know, that's their contractor office. So larger firms end up having facilities and a lot of storage, you know, smaller contractors, you know, so it'll be residential addresses that actually show up is where, you know, 2, 3, 4 people work.
Any other questions? Again, this was just to give you an overview of some of the things going on. Yes, sir.
you've talked about jobs kind of on an interchangeable basis, but jobs have various values, values to the economy, revenue, tax revenue, all those kind of things. Have you addressed or can you address the impact of the value of the jobs?
Right. So, you know, that's another discussion. You know, it's somebody who's been working in construction and they are one of those lost jobs. What do? Are they just out of the job market? Do they pick up and move somewhere else? Or are they working in a different sector? And this data doesn't tell us that. It doesn't tell us what happened to an individual person. It's just a net change by, well, actually by business. But in the next phase of the project, we will be looking at income and wages, which would be one of the things you're getting at. So that we'll see, you know,
so it will be factored in, in the next phase. The other item is the paradigm changes. The economy of New Jersey in 2003 was radically different than the nature of the economy today. We've had the pharmaceuticals move out, we've had the manufacturing move out. So you're dealing with two different animals. And how does this data see that paradigm change?
In the report, there is a section where we're talking about the jobs by sector, and that's, you know, the stuff I was talking about was construction. You know, we talk about all of the other sectors that are in there that way, and then the one piece that we'll put in at some point into all of this is looking at three key things in a little more detail. One is just for generalized labeling, tourism, you know, so it could be lodging and events and attractions. What's happening with that? What's happened over these time periods? Another one will be agriculture and seeing, you know, what are the trends there? And the third one will be looking at the pharmaceuticals. You do see job losses in the Highlands region and the adjacent municipalities in the professional, scientific, and technical services sector, which is probably reflecting some of what's happened in the pharmaceutical industry. So we will provide a more detailed look at those three.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none. The public, we will have the slideshow up for you. If you have any questions, feel free to submit them to staff. We'll try our best to answer them. At this stage, again, keep it in mind that it is just a piece of the overall puzzle. It's not the conclusion. At this point in time, we need to go into an executive session prior to going to the public session. We need a resolution read.
Yeah, I can read the resolution. Whereas the Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, permits the holding of closed sessions by public bodies in certain circumstances, the council is of the opinion that those circumstances presently exist, and whereas the council is seeking legal advice concerning a contractual matter, for which advice from council subject to the attorney-client privilege is required, now, therefore, be it resolved that the council may enter into closed session at its public meeting of March 19, 2015 for that purpose. It is anticipated at this time that the nature of the closed session will be made public upon completion or resolution of the issues to be discussed, except any matter protected by the attorney-client privilege will not be disclosed.
Can I get a motion, please?
Excuse me.
No. So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah. And we're going to have public after this.
For him?
We're not. He's not taking questions. As I stated before, directly.
Just
submit the questions to us at this point in time. There hasn't been.
They never get answered anyway.
Can
we give the public an estimate as to how long this will take?
Less than half an hour.
Great. I call the public portion of the meeting back to order. Vice Chairman Alston, I'm going to preside for a few moments. We're going to take a few moments to do a brief report on the Fenmore issue. Following the Fenimore issue, we are going to open up to the general public comment session, and we are going to first hear comments only on Fenimore. This is being done so that Chairman Riley can continue to be recused. We will then continue with public comments on anything else. So this is going to be reversed of how we normally do it. We've been doing Fenimore at the end. Tonight we're going to do it first, so for those of you who are here for Fenimore only, you get passed to get out a little bit early.
What happened in the executive session?
We do not have anything to report out of executive session right now.
Thank you.
On to Fenimore. Prepare a little statement. As you're aware, we've been receiving a large number of public comments regarding the Fenimore tract in Roxbury Township. While our council has no jurisdiction over the ongoing remediation and closure occurring on the site, we are charged with oversight of water resources in the Highlands region. Upon considering the most recent comments that we've received and also upon consultation with several members of the council, I've reached the conclusion that it would be in the best interest of the entire council if we form a committee to review and study any and all water quality issues associated with the Fenimore property. This committee will be titled the Fenimore Water Quality Committee, and it will be chaired by the Honorable Michael Dressler. Serving with Judge Dressler will be Carl Richko and Michael Francis, and I've consulted with all of them, and they've agreed to this high-paid position. I'd also like to recommend to the council that we send a letter to Commissioner Martin regarding our concern for water quality at the Fenimore site, and have asked our executive director to prepare a letter. And I have a copy of that in draft form that I will distribute to all of you right now. And I just wanted to say that I appreciate Michael, Carl, and Michael agreeing to take on this extra workload, and I believe that all of us on the council look forward to the results of the work that they're going to be reviewing. So I will pass this out very quickly to you.
I just state something about being on the committee. I spoke to Kirk, said that we would be taking information, I guess, from DEP. But I think, I think it would also be important for the committee to look at any information that the affected residents would give us, if there are any water samples that they have had analyzed through a state-certified lab. I think we should look at that also. We should just limit it just to the DEP, because I think there's a mistrust out there.
Carl, that was anticipated when the committee was being talked about and being formed. And we want to make sure that we get all the data, good data. We don't want just, we did this, and these are the results. We want certified results. But we want certified results for everybody, and then find out what the problem is, and then, address it from there.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I would just like to say that this is a committee I would have liked to have served on, and once again, I've been cut out of being put on any committees. Okay. And I object to that.
Okay. Any other comment from council members? If there's none, again, the draft letter's out there. If you have any feedback, please provide it to me, and we'll send it out to Commissioner Martin. We're now going to move into the public comment session. Again, is there anybody here to comment strictly on Fenimore tonight? At least one. So new tonight, I'm glad to introduce to you a time clock. And we've created this time clock so that there can be no dispute as to timekeeping. And the way it's going to work is that when you introduce your name, the clock's not going to run. But as soon as you start to talk about the deliberative nature of your presentation, the clock's going to hit. It's going to flash some friendly colors as you approach the limit of your 3 minutes, and at the culmination of the 3 minutes, you're going to get drowned out by some music that's been selected that we'll all be surprised by. No music tonight? So you will not be drowned out by music. There was a suggestion that we should do something similar to the Academy Awards.
This is in honor of the NCAA tournament, so when you have 5 seconds left, you shoot the last basket.
But in all fairness, we try to be very fair in providing equal time to everybody. We want to hear what you have to share with us, but we can't give somebody 7 and somebody 5, and we try to be generous in allowing people a little bit of space, but if we don't treat everybody the same, we can really be subject to criticism, and fairly so. So that's why we're doing this. Hank, is this going to kind of get you 3 minutes?
No, I won't even get out of my chair. But I think what you people should consider while you're putting the 3-minute chart up there is we come here once a month. We have 3 minutes. We're the ones that are losing the stuff, and so are the other people. I think you should put another minute on there. It would be, if you had 12 meetings, that's 12 more minutes in a year. That's not unrealistic.
Well, duly noted, and we'll continue to take that into consideration.
I appreciate that, because we also went to what you wanted, because originally these meetings were at 5 o'clock. You changed them to 4. And at that time, I suggested, okay, then shift to 3 to a 4 there. Fair swap.
Duly noted.
Public interest.
And we're not going to get into a debate about this tonight. Very quickly.
Are we still allowed to give 5 minutes to somebody else?
No, we've never done that. That's not something. It's 3 minutes each individual. If you got something that's longer, break it up between people. But it's
this is not Congress.
Right.
Thank God.
Okay, so again, we're going to commence with that tonight. And right now, Roxbury only, please, for the Fenimore Land Board. And then we will continue with all other public comment. So I think you wanted to speak on.
Yep, you're first.
Start the timer again.
No, you're good. You're good.
Shh.
You're the first one.
They take everything right before you start.
Can I say my question and then give my name? And then
I'm Bob Schultz. I'm from REACT, which is the Roxbury Environmental Action Coalition. First, I wanted to thank the council for putting together this commission. We have certainly lots of results of water that we will provide you. Do we send these via email? Do you want me to bring them in?
And they speak to the executive director at the end of the meeting.
Absolutely. So thanks so much for that. I did have a question. With the redevelopment waiver of the Fenimore landfill, is that a transferable waiver? Meaning if somebody else takes over the landfill, does that waiver go with them? Or can that waiver be sold to somebody else or given to somebody else? Because I'm not understanding of those rules.
Runs with the land.
What I would suggest is speak to council at the end of the meeting, and we can make sure you have that correctly answered.
And just to let you know that you might not have heard, this really hasn't made the news yet. The appellate court ruled some time ago that that the DEP illegally took over the landfill in June of 2013 from the owner, SEP. The Supreme Court ruled on that yesterday and upheld that decision. What that means for the future of litigation on that landfill, I'm not really sure. I'm not a lawyer. But I did want to let the council know this because it is not broad news as of yet. It does still smell up there. The residents still complain. There are plenty of people still getting sick up there. We will be running air tests, water tests, all independent, using certified labs. We will gladly provide the council those results, whether good or bad. We hope they come out good, but we know what we're smelling, so there's still something in the air up there. And we're still very concerned of what's going to happen now, what's happening, you know, in the water, in the ground, in the air, and what's going to happen to that site in the future. So we would still really like that redevelopment waiver rescinded so that nothing else can happen up there. But we still ask for that from the council. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Fenimore only.
Yes.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm the Highlands Project Director for the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. I want to compliment you on forming the committee to look into water issues at Fenimore. A couple of words of advice from somebody who's been there and done that, sampled around landfills. Don't necessarily require that data that you're reviewing is from a certified lab. There are lots of citizen scientists out there who collect water quality data, and you just need to interpret it correctly. You know, if you have 20 tests from a non-certified lab and they're all showing the same thing, there's probably a good chance that it's there. Another thing to consider is not just chemical data, but rather biological data from the stream. These kinds of data are much more diagnostic of long-term impairments, and the American Headwaters Association has compiled years' worth of data from that stream, which I believe will meet your requirements. And then finally, the simple idea that there's no problem because the standard isn't violated isn't exactly the way these things work. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of potential chemicals that are in those landfills. And those chemicals are unlikely to even have standards. So you need to be able to judge what the water quality is, even in the absence of a standard being broken. So if you're going to file an enforcement action, yes, you want to see that a standard is being broken. But if you're going to use these data to create a monitoring program or request additional monitoring from the department, it's important to realize that there's a lot of stuff that could be there if we don't have standards.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Bill Kibler, American Headwaters Association. Dave, thank you for a fabulous introduction. Just real quickly, in January when I was here, we submitted the slides that had information on the data from our stream monitoring in Roxbury and some other locations. I did see that it's on the record. Just for the record, those samples do go to a state and federally an EPA certified laboratory. Our data that comes from that program is certified by DEP as Tier D data. I got a fourth grader at home. If he came home with a D, he'd be in really big trouble in the house. In DEP world, for some reason, D is as good as it gets. Tier D data is what DEP needs in order to be able to use the data for regulatory purposes and for enforcement purposes. So our data meets that highest standard. In fact, DEP uses our data as well as some other folks' data in their mandatory reporting under Section 303D of the Federal Clean Water Act. If there are any questions as you move along this process, if you need more information on the data sheet, what's on the slides is summary data. We have the actual data sheets in detail at the office if you need. Thanks. I'm awful tempted to stand here and wait to see what the colors look like. I'll see it eventually.
Thank you. Anybody else to speak on Roxbury Fenmore issues? Okay. Fenmore?
Yep. My name is David Chope. I have a farm in Lebanon Township. And when it comes to collecting data, it would behoove you, because of the potential for litigation stemming from collecting samples, that the chain of custody be entirely with certified and qualified personnel. In other words, don't have somebody unqualified dunk into a stream or a puddle and then take it to a lab. Have the chain of custody certified so that there is no question as to its validity. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, last call for kind of you. Yes. You know, if I know your name, you've been here.
Roman Fry, New Jersey Conservation. I congratulate you on setting up the committee. I think it's great. However, I would urge you to reconsider appointing Tracy to this committee. She has very high expertise in water quality issues, and I think she would make a great addition, and somebody who wants to serve and has the time and energy to do so for free is somebody you need to take advantage of. Thank you.
Thank you. Final and last call for Rochford. Okay, we are going to close the Fenimore portion. Chairman Riley's going to be rejoining us, and we can certainly call up the first person for any other public comments. Hank, you're really anxious to go first tonight, right? That's what
Well, up to your executive session.
So I've got, you've got me for 3 seconds. You better step up there before Chairman Riley.
Well, I don't want to get on the needle here, but next time, what you should do is have your executive session after you're done. We're done.
We were losing members, and so we had to go into executive session so we had enough people to walk. That's the reason.
Well, then next time, let's do it the other way.
All right. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issues? Yes, sir.
Yes.
Who's got the control? Okay. Where's your car park? My name is Hank Plunt. I own 150 acres in the Highlands Preservation Area. At the June 19, 2014 meeting, I requested some information from this council as to how my property will be taxed in the future when I am no longer conforming. And I am left with property that has no equity, and that can do nothing but stand idle. I have not heard a word from anyone, so I guess the tax office is right. No one has any answers, because once again, the Highlands Act is so poorly written that this is another example of how it was to hurt so many people. Anyone who did not have property values stolen does not understand the care. The council has been given documents after documents by Pat Muffin, lining the evidence of scientific misconduct. The evidence has been submitted in many emails exchanged with Margaret Nordstrom, Andrew Davis, outlined in 7/10/13 letter to the council chairman Riley, and in many council public meeting comments. The council was given as an example some 20 pages detailing evidence of gross scientific misconduct on 9/19/13, and an additional 21 pages on 9/15/14. The council has not addressed any of these submitted evidence. The evidence of gross scientific misconduct represents an ongoing threat to the water supply, public health, and environmental quality. And as such, the council's legislation mission, a mission that the council members took an oath to uphold, council has an ongoing duty, not limited to regional master plan, to consider and comment input, public comment, C13:26K and L. The council, however, has failed to comment on these many concerns and questions. Many of these concerns, backed by supporting evidence, were matters that pertain to ongoing public health and water supply risk. Thanks for letting me speak. One other little thing I got here, going to the gut again in a second, is Senator Smith's got a lot of money down there in Trent. You don't know who to give it to. Come on, guys. Get on a stick and get out there and get it. It's there for the matter of fact, his environmental commission is meeting now to decide where to put it. God, this money found, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank
I
you.
Appreciate that. And I guess you're filling in for Mr. Davis.
Correct.
For how long, sir?
Till we hire somebody else.
Okay. So that could be 8 months, 9 months.
Would anybody else?
They'll have me.
Not if he's lucky.
Will anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue? Yes, sir.
I'm Jim
Julia Summers. Good evening. I'm the Executive Director of the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. I want to thank you very much for the presentation today about the economic activity in the Highlands. I have to say that it was not surprising to us, and I don't think that we're going to be surprised by any of the data that comes forth in the future. But I think it probably was surprising to some. But we look forward to learning more about economic activity in the Highlands and the results of the impact of the Highlands Act and the Regional Master Plan, which hasn't been implemented yet, on the Highlands region. I also wanted to bring up the next Fenerbahce dump issue, which you heard about earlier today, which is Federal Hill in Bloomingdale. It's really a serious issue. It has completely engaged the community. They have had two standing room only meetings so far in the community. There is huge opposition to what is being proposed. On a site that has forest resources, steep slopes, wetlands, high watershed values, critical habitat, rare plant communities, prime groundwater recharge areas, and abundant recreational and scenic resources. It has tremendous cultural resources. Apparently, if Elliot were here, he would tell you about what happened when George Washington sent soldiers to summarily execute people who were mutinying against what was going on under George Washington's leadership. And in fact, two people were killed there as a result of that. And there was also a beacon on Federal Hill. I mean, it is important for so many reasons. And if this proposal goes forward, Federal Hill won't be there anymore because Tilcon will have mined it away into oblivion. It's very important that the council pay attention to what is going on there and this apparent reversal of 25 years of proposals to preserve this site. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
May I be excused? I have another meeting at 7 and it's 45 minutes away.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I apologize to those that haven't been through.
Anybody else in the public? Yes, sir.
Good evening, Chairman Riley, members of the council. My name is Richard Plambeck. I'm from Chatham. I will give you a copy of my comments along with some background for those of you who don't know me. I'm here tonight to suggest that the Pilgrim Pipeline is something we want to avoid. And primarily because of water supply is basically your middle name. While New Jersey used to have an abundance of potable water available, that's changed dramatically over the years, and getting new water allocations are almost impossible. For example, the Morris County MUAs are trying to obtain additional supplies for many years. NJDSP has not signed off on any of those projects. Northern New Jersey's high population density and industrial past long ago forced the major cities to abandon local water supplies from contaminated rivers and wells and switch to surface water from the Highlands region. Local inhabitants of the Highlands rely primarily on local wells from unconfined aquifers like the Ramapo, which are highly susceptible to contamination from local spills. New Jersey has several sole source aquifers in the region, which provide at least 50% of the water supply for residents and businesses in the area. There's no available auxiliary source for them. Individual aquifers may supply local water systems as well as municipal and commercial systems serving populations some distance away. And commercial water companies provide primary or backup water supplies to many communities and may rely on both surface water from rivers and groundwater from wells to provide sufficient capacity and meet seasonal fluctuations and regulatory limits. So they're at risk of contamination to either groundwater or surface water. Pipeline leaks and spills can go undetected or unmitigated for long periods of time, releasing large quantities of dangerous chemicals into the water supply. And the estimated time of travel is used for wellhead protection, based on local geology, actually may overestimate the time available to react and mitigate leaks. Storm sewers, for instance, in my town, could very easily short circuit and speed the flows of contamination to streams which are closer to our wells and also to the river, which has a water intake right there. Once an aquifer is contaminated, it can take decades to clean up, if that's even possible. And treatment and mitigation measures are very expensive. In our area, East Hanover, Madison, Parsippany, have all had to put in air strippers on many of their wells to treat contamination with volatile organic compounds. And other towns have had to abandon wells. The Honeywell site in Hanover Township has been pumping and wasting groundwater for years to contain a contamination plume. There are also public safety and health risks, and I have to say, having been working for the Exxon gas system, there's an example in here, pipeline accidents are not always the way you would expect. In their particular case, we had a major compressor station fire. A person died, three people injured due to somebody over-tightening bolts and from plugs, which plugged a one-eighth inch diameter vent on a safety system which failed to shut down the system. Things happen with pipelines. I won't talk about it anymore because my time is up, but basically the Pilgrim Pipeline presents unnecessary risks and should not be permitted.
Thank you for your time. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
My name is Greg Gorman. I'm from Hamburg, New Jersey. I'm the conservation chair for the New Jersey Sierra Club chapter, and I'm speaking on their behalf. The reason for my visit is to ask the Highlands Council to protect our waters and join the other communities to resolve the prohibit oil pipelines in the Highlands. Over 28 communities along the Pilgrim Pipeline path have already passed resolutions in opposition to this. These customers are speaking to you. Last week's investment news, the new liquid gold is not oil, it's water, you know, so it's something that's valued to be protected. The other reason why I do this is a little bit of explanation here. There's been studies that basically show that over a period of time, 30, 35 years, every oil pipeline in the United States has had a major significant breach. When that happens, the items that he just described, pollution of the water, surface water, contamination of the aquifers, occurs. When you take a look at some of the other, what he referred to as the undetected, smaller, we assume that there is some kind of monitoring system involved. Not all pipelines are monitored, and a Wall Street Journal report last year reported that only 20% of the breaches were reported by those pipeline operators who actually monitored their system. A significant amount of them, about 25%, were probably reported by excavators who typically break it. The rest of them, over 50%, are people like you and me, or pilots flying over, report these leaks and whatnot. So the question is okay, so what's the big deal? You know, we know that if there is a major breach, it's going to contaminate the water. But there was a study done of an oil spill in Minnesota, and the report just came out in January of this year. It was conducted by the University of Virginia on behalf of the United States Geological Survey. And basically, what it looked at was a oil spill that occurred back in 1979. And it compared and what it found was that as the oil gets soaked, whether it was a large spill or a small spill, bacteria start to activate, start deconstructing the oil. Basically, in a nutshell, it turns into arsenic. Arsenic flows in. The NG, WP, I'm running fast here, sets a TDL on that. You have a water quality objective that says you can prohibit land uses that contribute to the TDLs.
Thank you very much for your comments.
I have written documents and research.
Submit them. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any item? Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Pilgrim, might as well stay on the issue. My name is Brendan Keating, and I'm from Chattanooga. I'm pretty sure that if they haven't already, they probably will come to you, the folks from Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings LLC. I think it would probably be pretty important, or if at all, if there was any way that we could kind of hear what they're saying to you. I've been to a couple of their presentations before, and they've got more holes in their arguments than a process trainer. In December, I was at a meeting with the Alliance for Action in Edison, New Jersey, and they said that pipelines were going to be better for us because they're less susceptible to terrorist attacks. There was a U.S. Navy SEAL that said that, you know, that's absolutely not true. I mean, if you go outside where a pipeline is, there's a marker in the ground that shows where it is. I think they're a sitting target. They said that the Bogan pipeline was going to prevent our area from being susceptible to fuel shortages during, they cited Hurricane Sandy. That's not true. The, you know, there's a pipeline that went from Texas up to New Jersey that was shut down because the pumping station didn't have power. We also know that the long lines of the gas stations were there because you can't get trucks to gas stations but have trees down in front of them. You know, there are just so many examples where they are really trying to sell the public with this, you know, it's this great idea. They say, oh, you know, the East Coast is totally underserved by pipelines. Well, that's because we live right on the coast, and it was designed that way. We have a competitive advantage being here. It's not like we're missing out on pipelines. So as this process goes forward, I just want to hope that maybe, you know, you can look at it with a critical eye and not take everything what they're saying for face value, because you can do just a little bit of research and poke so many holes right through them. And if at all possible, I mean, maybe I'll see if we can Oprah it or something like that. But I'd like to know what they're telling you, because, you know, there's no reason for this thing. If I was a property owner up here, and I'm not, I would be completely appalled that this thing is even being considered. You know, our friend over here comes month after month talking about the equity that he lost in his property, and there are so many restrictions that these property owners have on what they're allowed to build, what they're not allowed to build, and the fact that there's, you know, a process that's from the Standard Oil era, where all you have to do is protest the government, and they say, can we get some eminent domain over here? And we can go build on his property, but he can't build on his own property. And it just doesn't seem, you know, doesn't seem American. And that's all I got today. So thanks for, good to see you guys.
Thank you. Just so the public understands, we are not taking a position when an application comes before us. It wouldn't be heard based upon what they say. It would be based upon what our staff does to analyze the project and its merits or lack thereof. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any other? Yes, ma'am.
Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I would just like to reiterate the call for the council to pay attention to what's happening with the proposals to quarry Federal Hill and Bloomingdale. Federal Hill was one of the original, what we used to call, critical treasures of the Highlands. It really exemplifies the Highlands with the hills and the natural resources and the scenery and the threatened endangered species and the forests and the wildlife and above all the water. And the Pequannock River Coalition, whose mission it is to protect the Pequannock River watershed, is basically leading the charge and trying to keep this area from being quarried. The quarry already has quarried portion of the mountain, which is, you can see the quarry off of Route 287 to the west. But this would be a huge expansion, and it would destroy a resource that's scenic, it's recreational, it's historic. It's totally located in the protection zone, and the Highlands Council people, you can look at your own maps. It shows all the resources that are on there. Maybe not thoroughly the historic ones, but the natural resources would be fully displayed. And I hope that you know, somebody from PRC may be coming to speak with you, but we would like to alert you to this problem. There are a couple of pieces of land on top. Bloomingdale owns a parcel of land that is actually a Green Acres parcel, and Passaic River Coalition also preserved a slightly smaller piece. But there's some rumblings that the town may be thinking of trading that land for some land somewhere else. I don't know where else they would find an equivalent, and which would be a diversion from Green Acres, which is also not something that should be permitted. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Yes.
Good evening. First-time presenter.
Name, please.
Randall Charles. I'm from the Kinnelon Coalition for More Green Safe Fields for Our Kids. Kinnelon Borough, about 95% of it is located directly in the Highlands. We are taken care of, and we're proud to. We're stewards for several of the reservoirs, Charlottesburg, Split Rock, Butler, Booton, and we sit on several of the aquifers. that drain into these waterways, particularly to Pequannock. What we're concerned about right now is that the Highlands, which is fabulous, we've been happy with it on our protecting our land, helping us preserve it. The borough is prohibited, rightfully so, from putting an artificial synthetic tire crumb artificial turf field. They tried to circumvent it, and Senator Smith wouldn't let it out of committee. It died. Well, the town council, four members decided, gee, we found a way around it. It's called Exemption 6. Because we'll go to the school across the street on the same aquifer, same wetlands, and we'll use them to put the application in for the exemption under number 6, and we'll put an artificial turf field with tire crumb in there on that site of the high school field. Our concern right now is, if the town can't do it, rightfully so, why is the school allowed to have this exemption number 6 when they're in the Highlands as well? And there's the same threat of having, through the EPA, I have the material here, the EPA has come out and said there are no definitive studies on safety of artificial tire crumb fields. Matter of fact, there's over 30 chemicals that they've identified with CDC that are hazardous and carcinogenic. New York State has just put it in the Assembly and the Senate. Assemblyman Steve Englebright, Long Island, he is the chair of DEC. The bills are here. I'm going to leave it all for you. Our concern is if the town, if what's good for the town gives an exception to the school, something's not right. It's the same field, the same area. They're applying for a transitional wetland waiver. And we are bringing this attention to the council because we're against it. What we're proposing, and we'd like to see, and we will submit documentation, Madam Chairman, we will, by the deadline, double space, that we want to propose in that Schedule 6 have some teeth to it and be definitive. That the exemption number 6 will come out and say there is artificial turf will not be permitted by schools or churches as well as the municipalities that are situated in the Highlands because of all these toxic and carcinogenic chemicals. I can read the whole list off, but I'd rather leave the list with you. And again, thank you very much. And we made it, not bad, 9 seconds.
Thank you. Anybody else in the
council meeting today?
Yes, sir.
Jack Glazer, Kinnelon, head of the Board of Health in Kinnelon. I just want to expand on what Randy just covered. We're concerned about two issues, environmental and where they want to put this artificial turf, and health, the health of the kids that play on it. It's gotten a lot of publicity lately. If any of you subscribe or read the USA Today, on Monday, on the front page of USA Today, there was a big article about artificial turf and the concerns that municipalities have around the, and states have around the country. Randy talked about New York State. Kentucky now has a moratorium on any additional installations until they test. There's a county down in central part of the country that's done the same thing. California has now a moratorium on any additional fields until it's tested, because there's a lot of issues with it. One of the biggest issues right now, although there's many, many chemicals in these tires, is lead. The CDC now has it on their list of the 10 biggest sources of lead. They're concerned, of course, about people and kids and health, but it can get into the water besides getting into the kids who play on artificial turf. So we would highly recommend you give serious consideration to the whole issue of artificial turf and the impact it has on the public, both health-wise and environmentally, to the water they drink. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me a question.
No, I'm sorry.
I just realized what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Please raise your hand.
is David Shope. I'm a farmer in Lebanon Township. A couple things on today's presentation. The economic analysis really should start in earnest at 2003. The hip builders in the state got wind of the Highlands Act before any of us who were affected by it did, and started to pull out of this area. They stopped their subdivisions, they put their property up for sale, and they bailed out to what they called the Gold Coast. So you really should start 2003. Another thing that should be considered further on down the line is farmers are getting older. The average age of a farmer has gone up. USDA statistics show this. The USDA statistics also give you earnings per acre, which should be easy for you to value the land, or the outfit from California, whatever the case may be. Let me give you, for instance, Lebanon Township has said that, actually, you said to Lebanon Township that you can have 20 more septic systems. 20 more septic systems in an area that has a huge amount of undeveloped property. This too should help in the calculations of what the land is worth. Since this notation was made, two houses have been built in Lebanon Township. That leaves 18. When it comes to exemptions, you should also note that the property that was subject to exemptions because they were grandfathered prior to the magic date in 2004 are exempt or should be exempt from the Highlands Act. This is a preservation area property, and also should be exempt from the Stormwater Act, which was passed in February of 2004. As the magic date was January 1st, 2004, they should be exempt from the stormwater rate as well. Don't lose sight of that. An outfit called New Jersey Civic Justice Institute notes that New Jersey is one of only a handful of states that have not yet adopted some form of federal Daubert standard for expert testimony. Under the Daubert standard, before a witness offers expert testimony, the judge must, and then it goes through the three standards for accepting testimony as expert. Finally, I would like to quote for sustainability as a partner for economic regeneration and the impact of assessment of the New Jersey State Plan, the following. And I'm looking for volunteers from most particularly those that call themselves environmentalists and those on your staff and council.
Thank you.
Households that move to redevelopment areas will, in the short term, experience lower quality of life than they would have experienced in rural fringe areas. This is due to conditions currently found in the redeveloping neighborhoods, for instance, housing deterioration, higher crime rates, lower graduation rates in schools, and so on. However, these conditions will gradually improve over time. So I'm looking for volunteers because things will get better over time.
Thank you.
Take my word for it.
Anybody else in public wish to be heard? Please raise your hand. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second, please. All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor?
No, I protest. There's no quorum.